Well, hello everybody, and welcome to, I guess Jordan is calling this season two of Racing Hotspot. We only did six episodes in season one, so to speak. So I don't know if that would be a full...
Yeah, it doesn't have to be a full season.
I don't know if that would necessarily be a full season, but anyways, welcome everybody to, we'll just say Racing Hotspot 2025. That's a safer bet. My name's Devin Poslesny. I'm here with Mr. Jordan Jenkins as we're planning to do a full season here on Racing Hotspot. We'll do our best. I know both of us are getting busier with by the day, but we got a lot to talk about. And as Jordan just said, I texted him immediately after the Daytona 500 last night and said, "Are you free tomorrow? We need to talk." Because this, oh my gosh. I'm glad we didn't do it last night. Like, I'm glad we don't do it like the teardown. Because I was fired up. Like, I needed to step away and calm down. I mean, as a passionate sports fan, I can see where, like, Matt's frustration came from, but there are just things that NASCAR did this weekend that were just, like...
NASCAR is so back.
I mean, yeah, it's... Let me back up. So, it was an exciting weekend. We had some great finishes, great accidents, great racing, but, like, there were just things that NASCAR did that was like, what are we doing? Things that dated back a year ago in the 2024 Daytona 500.
Yes.
Let me back up. Things that dated back to August of 23.
Yep. Yeah, too.
Fly away, Ryan Preece. Like, oh my gosh. Anyways, so talking out, we're doing the show Monday, February 17th, right after the Daytona 500 weekend. Not going to lie to you, not sure how long the show's going to be. Don't have a lot of notes, but they're pretty dense notes, so we're going to go with it.
I mean, you said you had a lot to talk about, so I mean, it's
We are 2 minutes into this, and I'm pretty sure people are already either making the popcorn or have turned off the podcast.
Yeah. Probably the second one.
Probably. They're probably like, yeah, this. Never mind. They shouldn't have made episode 7.
shouldn't have came back.
They should have just cut it off. But no, okay. So, first of all, a great weekend. You had qualifying Wednesday night for the Cup Series, as well as practice, which was great because practice showed us that there were a couple cars that had issues that had they not turned the car on for practice and just went out to qualify, they would have been starting at the back of the pack.
Yes.
So, great job by NASCAR to add, what was it, a 50-minute practice?
Yeah, it was like, I think they were all 50-minute practices.
Yeah, it wasn't much, but it was enough. And as the guys at Fox Sports said, Larry Mack being one of them, said, hey, this isn't really a go out and draft practice. This is just go make sure that the car turns on type practice. You
make
know,
sure it like can turn. And
yeah, make sure everything that you built in the shop is working. And again, most of the cars were fine, but there were a couple RFK cars that were putting smoke out. And like, I think it turned out it was what, a like drive shaft thing or something like that. Like it was something mechanical that they could fix, or maybe it was a steering column. I don't remember exactly.
For Kozlowski?
Yeah.
For sure it was a steering column.
Steering column? Okay. So, steering column, again, would have been something that had he went out to qualify, he would have came right back on pit road and he would have started tail end of the longest line for the duel.
Yep.
So, anyways, practice qualifying on Wednesday. Everything went according to plan. Thursday night duels. We had a little bit of a rain scare there in the afternoon, but NASCAR was able to get the schedule back on track for a 7 o'clock start, prime time, Fox Sports 1. Duel 1 was nuts. Crashes and wrecks, and it was the crazier of the two. Duel 2 was a little quieter.
Yeah.
Until the end.
Yes.
And this indeed. And this is where topic number one of the episode presents itself. Let me paint the picture for you. You're coming to the checkered flag.
And you're like 100 feet from it,
I was going to say 100 yards. I was going to be nice.
Yards, 100 yards.
They're the leaders are side by side. They're dead dead heat. Entering the trioval, SVG gets a little loose, or there's contact, I'm not sure. He wrecks. They are looking at the flag, like they are in the restart zone, and NASCAR punches that caution flag. Eric Jones won the race at the line.
Yep.
At the time of caution, Austin Cendric won it.
Yes. So then you had the awkward wait of Eric Jones just sitting on the front stretch because he thought he won. Or he didn't think he won. He wasn't celebrating, but he was just waiting for the official word. And Cendric was just talking to Logano, like debriefing about what they could have done differently on pit road. And then it was kind of just awkward when NASCAR was just like, Cendric won, and Eric Jones was just like, let me go back to pit road.
Go back to my spot. Yeah, it was. So I remember, I think I texted you immediately and was just like, why not let them finish? Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that the, you know, NASCAR in the past has come out and said, well, the quicker we throw the yellow, the quicker safety vehicles can get out on the racetrack. I understand that. Except for the fact that, as we all know, those cars are going to keep wrecking through the trioval. And usually when the cars come to a stop, that's when your safety vehicles arrive, because cars versus cars don't necessarily go according to plan.
Right.
So NASCAR punches the yellow or hits the button. We have to wait. It wasn't long. It was maybe 2-3 minutes. NASCAR did a good job of making a quick decision, unlike Martinsville last year in the fall race. So we end the race 100 yards short. Okay. All right, whatever. Now, before I go any further, I want to make the note that every race series has a different group of race control people,
yes,
right?
It's not the same person. Not the same people up in the tower for trucks, Xfinity, or Cup.
Right. So unlike what you might see where baseball, where all the umpires get the same rule book and all the umpires get the same instructions and everything, NASCAR does the same, but it's still different people, right? Actually, I guess it's the same with baseball. But anyways, that was a bad example. But like, my point is there's a different group. So you have Friday night truck race. And race was okay. I didn't see much of it, I will admit. You saw more of it than I did.
Yeah, I saw the whole thing.
Yep. I caught the ending. We have an accident on the back, or in the middle of turn 3 and 4. Or right around turn 3. Mm-hmm. The leaders are racing back. Now, granted, it's nose to tail, not side by side, but nose to tail coming off turn 4, halfway between turn 4 and the trioval in that little short shoot area. NASCAR throws the caution.
And this one wasn't as quick of a decision as a caution either. This was like as pretty much almost from the same where. Pretty much like where the entrance of pit road, I think, was where they threw it around that area when the wreck was, like you said, in turn 3. So it like, took them a little bit, but
like you can tell that somebody up there was like, Dewey, I don't know, okay, just do it. But like looking back at the replay, I mean, first of all, you have then they follow the trucks to the line, and they go back to the scene of the crash, and nobody's there. Everybody drove away. So it's like, hold on. So let's go back to what NASCAR said. Cautions get our vehicles there quicker to help people. Mm-hmm. Well, if there's nobody to help, why are we? I mean, and looking back at the accident, yeah, you had a couple cars into the wall and things like that, but it was, or trucks into the wall, but it wasn't anything where it was like Ryan Blaney at Daytona in August of 2023, where it was a straight on head on accident, you know, or anything like that. Like it was just like slid up the racetrack, hit the wall, kept going. Like, I don't want to say casual accidents, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, it wasn't your usual Daytona big one at the end of a race.
Right. So that people are like, wait, why are we? So that was coming to the checkered flag. So okay, right? That was coming to the checkered.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, because they took the white. Yes.
Right. So now let's jump forward to the Xfinity race. By the way, CW did a great job.
I thought they did too. It's kind of, I thought Adam, well, I always liked Adam Alexander anyway. I think he's a really good voice. Jamie McMurray, obviously he's going to be busy doing Fox too. But I thought those three in the booth, Parker, Jamie and Adam were really good in the booth together, especially because you don't know. It's their first race together. I mean, Jamie and Adam have worked together, but Kligerman's been a pit reporter.
You know what? You know what?
And I thought they fit really well, all three. And I thought their pre-race coverage with they were in the infield somewhere, but they had a whole CW set up, mm-hmm. like in the infield, and they had like...
And they moved during a commercial break. Mm-hmm. They were in the infield, and then they were on pit road, yeah. and like it was... I think it was great.
They were just like surrounded by the fans, which NBC usually does too, mm-hmm. when they do the pit road stuff. But CEW had like a setup right on top of the fans, like right there.
And one of the other things, not to sidetrack my whole point to this conversation in the beginning of this episode, but like one of the other things that I think the CEW did right is the fact that in the past, your lead guy did play-by-play and nobody else talked. And it was kind of like, I hand off the mic to you, you talk, you hand off the mic to him, mic comes back to me. It was very organized, whereas they were all talking, which I know some people are like, oh my gosh, stop talking. But like, my opinion, if something's crazy happening, and you have Adam Alexander doing the play-by-play, and then in the background you have Parker and Jamie going like, oh yeah, there's kind of like pointing out different things, it builds more excitement.
Right.
And it kind of reminded me of when it was Mike, Larry, and Daryl for Fox in the early days, mm-hmm. where they would be like, they were just, it would be like the three of us, or you, me, watching a race, just talking over each other, being like, oh my God, you know, like, that's like excitement. So like, anyways, I felt like they did a really good job. So we're coming to the white flag.
They feel the caution again.
This is where my frustrations really started to happen.
And I'm pretty sure that... I don't remember exactly when the Xfinity wreck started happening, but I'm pretty sure it was outside of turn four.
It was area. It was entering the trioval.
Okay, so outside of turn four then.
The leader was two or three car lengths in front of the accident, mm-hmm. entering the restart zone.
Yes.
You have Justin Allgaier getting turned. And then he tags somebody, and they go flying up the racetrack head on into the wall. At that point, which in my opinion is a serious accident that NASCAR would need to get a safety vehicle to, the leader had not even – he was 50 yards from the line. I texted you three screenshots and said, here, oh, wait, hold on, here, maybe here. Because there were so many opportunities – for that caution light to be put on.
They didn't even take the white either. They took the white and then they were like, oh, caution.
Yeah, they took the white and immediate yellow.
Which I get because they had the race past that anyway, but they waited till, it was just weird, they waited till right after they took the white and it was like, okay.
Right. And whether or not it was an honest mistake that the guy, race control, was like, shoot. They already passed it. My opinion is, and I said, if you're friends with me on Facebook, you saw a couple of the posts this weekend. My opinion is, when you have such a high-intensity moment like that, you need to have your finger on the button. Because I would much rather, as a fan, have them hit the yellow, and have Justin Allgaier go spinning through the grass and not be a multi-car accident and have to do it again, then watch them not have to do 2.5 miles. I mean, what was it? It was a 300-mile race.
Yes. Yeah, 300 miles.
Not on Saturday. It was 298.5.
Yeah.
Nope. 297.5. If I'm doing my math right.
Yeah, 297.5. Yeah, technically 2.5 miles. Yeah.
So it's like, what the heck? You know, and it was the same deal at the 500 last year. Ross Chastain gets turned out of line. He's going in the grass in the beginning of the trioval and slides back up the racetrack and collects more cars. And NASCAR says, oh, we just didn't know if he was going to stay down there. Let me tell you something a little bit about how circles work. Like, but in all seriousness, or how curves work, Chastain got spun out in the beginning of the corner, meaning even if he went straight, guess what? The wall was going to wrap back around. Whatever. So now let's fast forward to the 500. Mother Nature got involved. We got the race going. Ryan Preece.
Well, actually, we got the race going, and then we did it. And then, we're getting ready. Oh, just kidding. And then, we got it going.
And then, so then we go throughout the race, and Ryan Preece qualified for Starlink's next, SpaceX's next launch, which we'll get to in a minute. And we get, first of all, well done. I know I'm sitting here talking about NASCAR and blah, but like, well done by NASCAR to let Riley Herbst slide through the grass and not throw the caution. He got turned just before the finish line, and NASCAR let that one play out before hitting the caution. Herbst was able to slide, save it, and keep going. So we race on. Race to turn one, race to turn two, side by side, headed down the back straightaway, and then there's contact, major accident down the back straightaway, and NASCAR decides to let them race back. And I'm not going to lie to you, Jordan. I don't know how you viewed it, but it seemed like Byron and Reddick in the beginning in turn three and four were half pedaling it, waiting for that caution to come out. Because if you look at the video back, they're not going. Now, granted, they just checked up to avoid a wreck, but they're not going 100% until they get off of turn four, when I guess maybe somebody said, still green. And then Reddick gets up to the back bumper of Byron, and Byron wins, and then they throw the yellow. What? Like, I think there was, I don't know who it was, but I saw something online that was basically saying, you know, hey, you know, oh, I think it was Denny Hamlin. How many times do we see it? You make a mistake, so the next time you overcompensate to fix said mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Do we throw the yellow too early in the duels? Okay, so on the 500, we're not going to throw the yellow at all.
Right.
Like, it just, it, whatever. Again, different series, different race directors. But I feel like, to an extent, you need to, as NASCAR is, at the overall, whether whoever be the president or the competition director or whatever, they need to sit down and say, hey, in situation A, we do this. Situation B, we do this.
Situation C, we do this, etc.
Yep. And then from there, you know, there are some situations that it's at the race director's discretion. Is that debris in the racing line, or did it blow off into the back straightaway runoff area? It did. We race on. But it just... I appreciate you letting me rant for a minute.
Of course. I knew you had to anyway, so I was prepared.
It just...
I think... Based on what I saw from other people's reactions on Facebook, Instagram, X... People like that NASCAR let them race back, which I do too.
We do.
But it's like what you said, the consistency in it. Mm-hmm. That was the furthest that a final lap wreck had started all weekend. Mm-hmm. And they didn't throw the caution when there was one 100 yards from the start finish line coming to the checkered and they threw it. So it's kind of like weird, like, oh, like the consistency, I think, is more important. Like, I loved... They let them race it back, because obviously that was, it was in the front of the pack, but that collected 95% of the remaining field. but they still let them race it out. I mean, I kind of figured Reddick wasn't going to catch Byron anyway, but
yeah,
either way, they still let them get, like, take the checkered instead of the caution and the caution checkered.
And they took the checkered, and then as soon as Reddick, I think, passed it, they threw the caution.
Yeah.
So, or maybe it was Johnson. I don't know.
Well, it was on the final lap.
No, I know. But what I'm saying is they either, like, they let the leader take the checkered flag,
and then they
threw the yellow to allow safety vehicles to be deployed. But even then, they go back to the back straightaway where the accident happened, and most of your vehicles are either driving away or are, you know, making, they're not, the window nets aren't down. Like, they're making an effort to go. So it was kind of like...
Right.
I don't know.
The weird thing to me, too, is I don't know if you caught this, but Eric Jones' thing was dual two, correct? Mm-hmm. Okay. So Mike Joy at the end of the broadcast said how he applauded NASCAR for making the throwing the caution there. But then he applied to NASCAR for not throwing the caution at the 500. It was kind of just weird. It's kind of like it's kind of the same circumstance. I know a duel is a duel, and it's the 500, so you don't really want the 500 to end under caution, but it's kind of like same circumstance.
So here's my thing.
Because especially where when Denny spun, he went pretty much head on into the wall, or maybe a car hit him. He hit a car. I don't quite remember how that the wreck started. I mean, I know Hamlin spun and Cindric spun, but Hamlin went up the track. But I don't remember if Hamlin
tagged Reddick actually.
Okay, so he
got a piece of Reddick, which is probably why Reddick was further behind Byron in the beginning because of momentum loss. But here's my thing: you have a 2.5 mile racetrack, right? If you take the white flag, and then the wreck happens immediately after said white flag, that is a caution to me. Because if you think about it, these drivers are going to race hard all the way back to that line. And guess what? The scene of the crash is right on in their lap. If you have the white flag and the accident happens on the back half of the lap, and these guys are only going to drive another quarter of a mile to the white flag, and then they have almost 2 miles to cool down before they get back to the scene of the crash, don't throw a yellow. You know, even last night in the 500, you had the accident happen on the back straightaway. So half of the racetrack, they race back, they get to the white flag, and then guess what? They have the other half of the racetrack to slow down. You know, it just, whatever. It is, at the end of the day, it's one of those it-is-what-it-is situations. But it's just frustrating that it's inconsistent. And I don't, I mean, like I said, we track this back to the Daytona 500 in 2024. You have a car sliding in the middle of a corner. That slide, their trajectory, I butchered that, but you know what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
Says they're going to go straight. And when the racetrack curves back around, race car is going to go straight.
For those of you, since you guys can't see us, Devin showing his artistic skills on a tablet while he was talking and showing this.
I'm using it as an ability for me to further, like, help myself explain. Like, it's annoying that it's like we live in a world where you have all these technology and everything to say, oh, yeah, guess what? When a car goes down here, it's going to go this way. And then NASCAR comes out and says, oh, well, we didn't know it was going to come back up. And it's like, how many? Is this your first week at Daytona? Because how many years have we seen cars go sliding through that infield, through the ball field, and come back up the racetrack? Because guess what? The racetrack wraps around the ball field.
Yep.
I don't know. It is what it is. I mean, overall, I think it was good racing. That just frustrates me.
I think it frustrated a lot of people.
I think so, too. And that's part of the reason why I'm being very open and out honest with it. If I felt like I was the only one on the island here, I would have just been like, good races.
But it kind of sucks for William Byron because now he's won back-to-back Daytona 500s. All of them are all like, oh, where's the car? Oh, you're not going to throw the caution there?
Right.
It's like...
Anyways. Anything else you'd like to say on this topic? I think my soap opera's over.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a consistency thing with me. I mean, I see why they threw the caution in the duel, but when they counteract with the 500, letting them race to the line when the wreck happened on the backstretch from the front of the field, not even like the middle of the pack, it was the front of the field. Hamlin was leading when he was the one that was spun, and Cindric too. And, To let them race back, which I'm always up for racing to the line. I'm pretty sure a lot of people will agree with that. Unless there's like a certain circumstance, like a car up in the air, probably not going to let that race out.
Right.
But I think it's just a consistency thing. Obviously, there's different race directors in each series, but so I know it's not going to be consistent all the time, but it feels like it's almost an every week thing at this point because it happened a lot last year. Like it happened at the, I think it happened in Indy. Mm-hmm. It happened at the Roval.
I think so, yeah.
So.
It just, again, I mean, I understand, as you, to echo what you just said, I understand that unless you have the same five people do every race,
then it's not going to be the same.
Yeah, there's going to be the inconsistencies. But again, I mean, I'll use me as an example for DPPG. We have games coming up this week. I'm not going to personally be at every one of them. But guess what? My producers that will be are going to get the same list of instructions that I will be working off of.
Right. The only thing that will be different is that game that they're producing.
Yep, and the person.
Yes,
and
that too.
And the thing is like, I understand as the executive producer of DP Production Group that they're going to possibly be in situations that I'm not, right? An overtime, an injury, things like that. But for the most part, the whistle will blow, the clock will start, the clock will stop, there will be baskets shot. Here's how you do this. And then this way, it's somewhat consistent.
Right.
You know, and yeah, like I said, there are going to be things that are unique. You know, Ryan Newman, who was it? Not Ryan Newman. He didn't catch the catch fence, but one of the Xfinity.
Austin Dillon. Austin Dillon.
Austin Hill in the series. Xfinity, yeah.
Matt Snyder did too.
Okay. He catches the fence. Thankfully for the race directors, it was at the end of the race. But if that happens at lap 50, that's a unique situation.
Right.
You know, so I can understand where if the race directors for Xfinity handle that differently than the Cup guys would. Because, again, it's a unique situation.
Right.
But it's like when you're doing basic things, these basic things should be consistent. You know, first sight of trouble, hit the button.
Yeah.
No matter where it is,
yeah.
The first sight of trouble,
yep.
Hit the button. Yep. Let me back up. The first sight of trouble on the white flag lap. Coming to the white.
Actually. Right.
Coming to the white.
Yeah. The white is kind of... It's a give or take, depending on how bad it is.
Right. Like I feel like NASCAR should come up with on the racetracks, different zones. If you're in this zone, automatic caution. If you're in this zone, determine how bad the accident is. If you're in this zone, come into the white flag, hit the yellow as soon as something happens. You know what I mean? Like I almost feel like they need to come up with something, maybe not zones, but you know what I'm trying
over
to say.
Over timeline.
No, don't bring that back. But what I'm saying is like, think about it. If NASCAR, in my opinion, should come out and say, listen, if they're coming to the white flag, I want three people watching that whole field. And as soon as somebody wiggles and or starts to spin that you know it's not savable, somebody yell, ah, or something, you know, like, shoot the flare gun. Like, I don't care. Like, get the attention of the race director to hit that button.
Like, props to NASCAR for not throwing the caution on Riley Herbst's spin.
Right.
He saved it.
Exactly.
Because it looked like it was like going to be like, oh, he's going to take the whole field with him. And then he saved it, which was a great save by him. Really.
100%.
Because I think he ended up finishing fourth.
Well, that's because
he
came off turn two and then went, whoa, okay, let me slow down. But like, I'm just like, I said that earlier in here. NASCAR let that one play out.
Mm-hmm.
Based off of how they handled the Ross Chastain situation last year, as soon as Herb started to spin at the line, they should have hit the yellow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but NASCAR let that one play out.
Yes.
And it worked in their favor, or in our favors as fans.
Right.
So it's like, that, in my opinion, is how you handle that. Unless it's before the white flag, then hit the button.
Yes.
You know, like, and again, if let's say that is Riley Herbst who spins coming towards pit road, let's say instead of at the finish line, he's more towards that short chute, and he spins, and they hit the button, and then he just spins and doesn't hit anything and is able to drive away, I think fans at the end of the day would rather say, okay, re-rack him and go, than them go, oh, he's going to say, oh, never mind, he just wrecked. Okay, race is over.
Right.
You know, like, play it safe in that sense. You're here for entertainment? Give us entertainment. Don't cut our races short.
True.
I don't know. Anyways. That was a half an hour on that one topic. Moving on. What the heck is
the
up
new,
with that?
The new NASA astronaut, Ryan Preece, based on his new profile picture on X, which I actually laughed at.
What is going on? And it's not, let me back up, it's not just Ryan Preece related. This is a NASCAR issue.
But it just happens to be Ryan Preece because he's flipped twice at Daytona in two years now. And it's not, so I've seen a lot of people debating on this. Obviously, you don't want the cars to flip like that, especially what Ryan Preece said on Fox and that outside the Info Care Center. I thought about my daughter at the time when it went quiet. It goes to show you how he even said that his flip last night was worse than the one at Daytona Fall in 23, which says a lot.
Yeah, that does.
But I've never seen that car was pretty much doing a wheelie halfway down the backstretch while it wasn't even touching the ground, and then it flipped while it also never touched the ground. And then it's kind of both sides because they've been flipping in NASCAR for decades. Since NASCAR really became a thing, really.
Right.
So I don't know if you can really stop the cars from going airborne.
You can't.
But the thing is, with this next gen car, it's a flat bottom.
They're not helping.
It's a flat bottom. So, I think it was Corey LaJoie that flipped at Michigan, or was it Kansas?
Yep.
It was like, that's not a track where cars are supposed to do that. I'm not saying Daytona's a track that's supposed to happen, or Talladega, but those are the two tracks you really are.
Will happen.
You're going to assume it's going to happen. Chris Buescher flipping at Charlotte a couple years ago was kind of a different story. Can he kind of hit the sewage drain or whatever it was? Whatever he hit, but for Ryan Preece, as soon as he was hit, the car lifted up.
Which I think is there's another part to that I'm gonna talk about because I texted you about the tire thing.
Yes.
To what you just said, I agree. Cars have been flipping for decades.
So there's nothing
new at that. But the NASCAR, current NASCAR stock car, race car, not a NASCAR.
Weighs way more than what it did back then.
That, but also it's not, in my opinion, and again, granted, I'm not anything special here.
Neither am I.
You know, I play racing on Xbox. But like, when the bottom of the car has nowhere for the air to go, that's your issue.
Right.
Preece said it best. When the bottom of the car is like a sheet of plywood on a windy day, it's like, oh my gosh, that makes sense. And I mean, my dad and I applauded him because all of us went, oh, because we've all had those moments walking out with some big sign or something, and it's like you're getting blown away.
Definitely. Ryan Preece definitely. Well, definitely very tough because you walked right out of the car to the couple of year, or last year.
Yep,
technically last year, almost 2 years.
Year and
in this at the fall race in 23 when he just flipped probably 20 times and probably 100 feet in the air felt like, and then yesterday to just get out of the car no problem, and even like a few years before that when he was in the 37, I forgot what team it was. I'm pretty sure it was JTG Doherty.
I think so.
Probably not what they were called at the time, but it was that team where he had a big hit on the inside wall too, and his car went airborne too. So it's just like Ryan Preece is that. It looks. I looked at over the course of every generation of stock cars that NASCAR's put out, there's always been one driver that always gets like, the big wreck. Mm-hmm. Newman in the last generation. Yep. Unfortunately, right now, it's Ryan Preece, it feels like.
Well, and I think Boyer said it best, and he said it jokingly, but he was like, or maybe it was Harvick, one of the two, said that nobody would question Ryan Preece if he said, you know what,
I'm good. I'm out of here.
You know, and it just, I don't know. It goes back to, like, this is one issue. In my opinion, I love the idea of the Gen 7 car. Safety, innovation, everything, you know. But as much as I hate to say it, the problems with this car outweigh the good, in my opinion.
It does.
You know,
because
safety alone, let alone the fact that these some of these racetracks, these cars drive like bricks.
Right. And props to NASCAR with this current generation. Obviously, the first year they had it, Kurt Busch unfortunately had to retire because of the concussion he suffered in Pocono qualifying. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I think Bowman suffered a concussion in the next gen. But, I mean, with some of the hits they've taken overall, like Chandler Smith in the duels, I mean, he was sore, but he wasn't hurt. Right. I mean, he was hurt, but, you know, he was just sore, like, as expected.
Right.
But no one has had, like, they try to improve it, which obviously it's a, I mean, this is year 4 of the next gen now, Gen 7.
Yeah.
And obviously it's going to take, it's always going to be growing pains. You know, NASCAR's not going to get the car right the first year, but we're year 4 now, and we're still like, what's going on?
I think for me, two things. One, the Gen 6 car was around for what, 7-8 years?
Yeah, something like that.
And yeah, they had growing pains in the beginning, but it wasn't as bad. And I feel like they built this car, they spent years on it. Now, granted, COVID extended that, but still, they spent years on it. And now they need to make adjustments, which is expected, but I feel like the amount of room that they can adjust is so limited. You know, okay, well, here is what we did with the front end and rear end impacts. We made little divots in the frame and stuff for crushing and panel. That's great, but what did that do? You know, like, it still hurts. The car is still rigid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the car is still, like, it's not, I don't know, it's not giving as much as I was in the past. And it might be partially because of the carbon fiber side of it, mm-hmm. not so much the sheet metal side
right.
anymore.
And
but, like,
at props to NASCAR, because they always tried something. Like, when we were at Daytona last August, they put, I'm going to call it a shark fin.
I know, yep.
But I forget the actual terminology for what they used.
It was a rear window, more or less a fin.
Yeah. So
to try and make it so the air did not, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but the air did not just openly flow across the car when it got sideways.
Right. So they tried that. Daytona, when we were there, Michael McDowell went airborne. Well, he also got hit in a weird spot.
But
a couple laps later, Josh Berry flipped and no one hit him. He literally just turned on the back stretch, and once he went sideways, the car lifted up and went on its roof. So it's kind of like,
yeah,
it feels like, you know, the cars are going to flip no matter what. They, like we've said, they've been doing it for decades now, pretty much ever since NASCAR has been a thing, really. But these cars, the Gen 7 cars now, have a solid bottom. So if the air gets under it, the air's not going to go anywhere. The air is just going to lift it up, no problem.
And the thing is,
yesterday, it made Ryan Preece's car look like it weighed like 5 pounds. Yeah. It lifted up once Preece got hit.
Right.
And it lifted up, no problem. He was probably in the air for, felt like 15 seconds. That's probably an exaggeration, but
he probably went 50 yards.
Yeah, and he was in the air the whole time.
Right. And the thing with the solid bottom, to play devil's advocate, and anybody at home listening to this going, well, what's the point of the solid bottom? It's all for aerodynamics, right? It's meant to help the cars suck up to the ground more. Like, and I get it, you know, it's you know, efficiency, and like the less, think about gas mileage, you know, the less resistance of air, the better the fuel mileage, like things like that. But like, in my opinion, the question is at what cost?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it was year one with the Gen 7 car. Harrison Burton flips down the back straightaway at the Daytona 500.
Yes.
You know, and then a couple of years later, you have LaJoy flip down the back straightaway at Michigan, which, I mean, Michigan's a high-speed track, but still not something you normally see.
Right.
You know, Preece flips twice. McDowell almost flipped. Granted, he got a little extra help from from, I think it was Logano, and then also he was at a weird point where the banking got, like, there were different factors in that situation, but it's like, there were multiple weeks last year where you kind of walked into the race and said, okay, boys, who's flipping today?
Right.
You know, like, and that's not what you want, you know, and again, cars are going to flip. The only, and I saw one of the pages that I follow said, you know how you make them not flip? You slow them down to 150.
No one wants that.
Or you don't race at Daytona, Talladega, or at Atlanta.
Right.
You know, and then now it's like, okay. But the thing for me is, like, in my opinion, and again, I'm not engineering savvy or anything, but, like, take away the diffuser. That is how you allow air to flow through the race car and allow air to not go on, like, you know, it, punch holes in that sheet of plywood. And guess what? Walking across the Home Depot parking lot is going to be a lot easier on a windy day. Like, and again, my question is at what point does NASCAR have to make the drastic change? You know, it just, that was my frustrating thing after Daytona or going into Daytona in August of last year was NASCAR came out. This was after LaJoy had flipped, you know, after a couple other drivers had flipped. NASCAR came out and said, okay, hey, we're going to add the shark fins. That should keep them on the ground. And it's like, no. Like, yes, but no. Like, it seemed like the obvious answer is right in front of them, and they're not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the thing for me. And again, that's just my pure opinion, and I don't want anybody at home right now might be going, it's not that easy. And you know what? It might not be.
It's not.
And I know it's not to a degree, but at the same time, it's like, you had cars flip in the past. Yes. But they were outside factors. It wasn't necessarily the car.
Right.
Now, you know, we removed the grass in the back straight with Daytona, which I, as much as the IMSA and the sports cars, it changed the way the Rolex 24 Hours was this year. It was very forgiving on that back straightaway bus stop. But, like, I agreed with it because it was the same deal as you have at Talladega.
Mm-hmm.
But now here you are. You still have another flip. Now, with that...
Take the asphalt away.
With put them on dirt! With that said, though, there was another factor in this, which I texted you about during Bowman Gray a couple weeks ago, the wheel-to-wheel. Ty Gibbs rode to the front wheel of somebody else. I don't remember who it was.
Dustin Haley.
Okay. Coming, he went to hit him just as a, I don't agree with what you did. And he launched up.
Yes.
That happened to somebody else during the weekend at Bowman Gray. There were two of those. I don't remember who the other one was.
I don't remember either.
But my point is it's like what you would see with the modifieds or open wheel.
Yeah.
So that I flagged immediately in my book because I was like, why is that happening? That's never happened before. And all it takes, and this is just my mind thinking 10 steps ahead, all it takes is at a place like Bristol or a place like Dover or a place like New Hampshire, two guys running down the back straightaway at full speed. I'm going to turn left to try and door you. And now guess what? I'm launching into the catch fence.
Yep.
You know, the wall is only 5 feet tall, 4 feet tall, however tall it is.
Yeah.
So in the Priest crash last night, I went back and looked at it. And I think to a degree, that is what helped the front end pop up. I know NASCAR is going to take that car back to the R&D center and look at it, and they're going to look at film, they're going to look at SMT, they're going to look at everything. But I think that that was part of the reason why it popped up. And as soon as it popped up, the air got underneath it. And I will say thank goodness for Eric Jones being there, because Eric Jones's car, in my opinion, held Ryan Preece's car down on the ground. Because if he wasn't there, I almost don't know if it would have happened, but my first thought was, are we going to see a Ryan Newman-style accident in the COT a couple years ago where his front end goes up, back end goes down, and then he lands on the roof backwards? Now, granted, Newman was the other way around. It was the back end that went up.
Mm-hmm.
But still, he went full rotation.
Right.
So point being is, I think NASCAR needs to look at the wheel-to-wheel thing. Because wheel-to-wheel conduct's going to happen. But I fear that in a high-speed place, a car's front end launching is a catch fence issue. And depending on the racetrack, I mean, New Hampshire Motor Speedway, we're 8 feet away from the catch fence, which is safe, but debris is still going to make it through.
Right.
You know, and at the end of that main straightaway, when they're going 150 miles an hour.
Not even at New Hampshire.
No, but but I'm just saying, okay, you know, they're hitting 120 entering turn one. Ryan Preece makes contact with somebody and his front end pops up. Guess what? Heads up.
Right.
He's coming right for row five, you know, or whatever. Like, it just, it's something I think NASCAR needs to be aware of. And for me, it was just something that made me concerned with another, let's put it this way, another layer to the onion that is the next gen cars concerns.
Right.
So, anyways, any other things you wanted to talk about? Because that's really all I got.
Shout out Cletus McFarland.
Yes. Well done. Oh,
you know that, I mean, I don't know if you probably heard this, but so NASCAR put an in-car camera in his car for the ARCA race. There's 55,000 people watching that live stream on the NASCAR channel of just his in-car.
That's awesome.
So, and I mean, it goes to show you how much they just loved him, especially when Fox invited him up to the booth after he wrecked, and he gave out, like, probably one of the best interviews I've seen in a long time outside the InfoCare Center, saying he was ripping around Daytona like a bald eagle.
NASCAR needs more personalities like that, because, first of all, him alone, his name brought viewers. Mm-hmm. The fact that they let that in-car camera, or they didn't let that, but they put that in-car camera as just a general feed. I mean, think about it. You and I are going to put that in-car camera on, but we're also going to have another camera feed watching, because I don't want to necessarily just, as a NASCAR fan, don't want to necessarily just watch a guy. Like, it wasn't like you could see the racetrack. Mm-hmm. It was just his in-car feed. So I don't know where he is on the racetrack.
It's just, you're just seeing him.
Yeah, you're just seeing him. But, like, for them, it was, or for him, it was his fans wanted to see him.
Right.
You know, so it was, I think that was really cool. Great job by NASCAR. Good job to NASCAR also by figuring out a way to include him without putting him on the racetrack with the cup cars. You know, kind of like a, hey, you can come run, but yeah, run ARCA.
Right.
So, shout out to Castro Neves. And the reason why I want to shout out to him is he made the music video for "I'm Still Standing" by Elton John very easily for this weekend.
Oh yeah,
the amount of hits that guy took in practice, in duels, in ARCA, in the Cup race, like, it was like, geez, this guy keeps going, and that's what he does. And but like, even, my goodness,
Castro Neves even got wrecked after the race was over.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, oh, poor guy.
It's like, geez. And yeah, exactly. That poor guy. Like, and that was the thing. He's the nicest person you'll ever meet.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I love his interviews every time. He was like, I think it was during the rain delay yesterday. I think it was Jamie Little talking to him. Mm-hmm. And he was just smiling ear to ear.
Yeah, I mean,
he was laughing as he goes, yeah, I even got wrecked after the race, too. Like, it was crazy.
Yeah, like, he's such a good guy and such a great personality. And, I love that he was there. Little controversy revolving around the provisional, but we can get into that another time. But like, it just kind of was one of those things where his accident in the 500, he was holding the top lane,
and all of a sudden here comes his own teammate.
Yeah, it's like, oh my gosh.
Even in the duels, he wrecked, and it wasn't even his fault.
Right.
Like, I don't think he wrecked probably 50 times, and none of them were his fault.
His wreck that ultimately took him out of the duels, unfortunately, I think, was a rookie mistake, because it looked like he was just going too fast on the apron.
And he came back up, and he just couldn't control it. And then, but he already, his car was wrecked at that point. He probably wasn't going to be wrecked out until he did that, but
right.
I mean,
yeah, I mean, and again, it's just kind of a learning curve type deal where in an Indy car, I mean, that apron is the same as the Indy 500 or Indianapolis Motor Speedway, where you can hold it going this fast on that apron, but then the cup car, it's like, nah, we don't have the same aerodynamics. But no, I mean, shout out to Cash Neves for sticking with it, and hopefully he'll be back in the future.
He said he wanted to test out a road course
let's do it.
I mean, Project 91, that's pretty much what they do anyway, the road courses. So.
Right.
Watkins Glen, Sonoma. I mean, not Sonoma. Sonoma's not, people don't really do Sonoma.
There are six of Watkins them to choose Glen, from now.
Watkins now, Glen, I mean.
Watkins Glen, I think, would probably be the one for him because of the fact that IMSA races there as well.
Right.
So and IndyCar has in the past.
Right.
So I think for him, it probably is like, I know this course.
But you know, Helios won so much, like even to where every time he was interviewed, they popped up that he won the Dancing with the Stars in 2007. They were just like, he just wins everything. Every time he shows up, he's going to win.
Oh my gosh.
Every time he does something, he's going to win.
They put that on the screen and it was like, 500, Indy 500s, Rolex 24 Hours.
2007 Dancing with the Stars.
I saw that and I was like, why are we showing that? But anyways, so.
Also, it seems like one of the funnest teams to watch. I don't know if funnest isn't a word, but.
I don't think that's, so. Anyways, go on.
It's going to be Spire Motorsports. Just watching Carson Hocevar's interview in front of Michael McDowell's holler and watching like Justin Haley and Michael McDowell just video bomb it. And then Carson Hocevar looking at Justin Haley like on the camera in front of him and goes, wow, what an ugly looking fella. And it was just like, it seems like Spire's like, especially because Haley's not really new to Spire, but he kind of came in like somewhat near the end last year with the driver swap and drove for Spire and Cup earlier. And then, but he's Michael McDowell's new to Spire. I mean, mm-hmm. Justin Haley's full time in Cup and Spire, so it's kind of like, wow, they're getting along well, and it's great to see.
I was very happy to see McDowell up front yesterday because
I was too.
there was concerns or opinions shared that him going from front row to Spire could have been considered a step down.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that granted it's super speedway racing, so there's the equalizer, but still,
yeah, you have Corey LaJoie led him. He's Rick Ware.
It's not what I was saying, but like, it's not what I was getting at. But what my point is,
anyone can lead. Corey LaJoie is up front.
It is an equalizer, but at the same time, you still have to have some what of a good hot rod underneath you.
Right, you have to have at least a fast car.
Yeah,
you can't just go in like being 5 seconds off the pace and be like, oh, I'm leading.
Right, exactly. So no, I mean, I think that was good to see.
That was cool to see with Ryan Preece too. He had speed all week.
Yep.
And I was really hoping he just missed the front row lock in for the 500, but he was like, once he qualified like third or fourth qualifying night when it was just for the duels, it was just like, wow. He has a fast car, which I knew he was going to anyway with RFK, but it's like, wow, he actually has like probably his best opportunity in Cup so far.
Now, so many things to talk about post Daytona 500. Obviously, we picked those two topics to talk about the most, but like even like Joey Logano, them diagnosing that issue. Great job by Team Penske to say, wait a minute. This isn't supposed to be here.
Kyle Busch showed his villain era last night in his interview
about Joey Logano.
Yeah. You could just tell by it before. I think, I don't even remember who interviewed him. Regan Smith, I think it was.
It was so funny because.
And you can just tell by how, like, he was just look standing there before Regan even said anything. It was just like, Kyle Busch, he's bringing back his old JGR days right here.
It was so funny because they interviewed Joey Logano before Kyle. And Joey's like, well, you know, the
Stenhouse was here.
Stenhouse moved. I couldn't do that. I lifted.
I got
blah,
stuck,
blah, blah.
And Kyle Busch goes, yeah, Joey did. Yeah. This is like an impatient, and it was like, on that wreck, I think it was both Stenhouse and Logano, because Logano, I don't know what he was doing. He kind of hooked Stenhouse, but Stenhouse was just like, oh, look, I'm here.
Stenhouse didn't, like, I think, so the argument was made by my dad, and between my dad and I, my dad said that Logano should have lifted, and I agree with that, but. And then my dad said, or I said he should have lifted, and dad said, well, then he would have caused the wreck behind him.
Mm-hmm.
Although I kind of get where my dad's coming from, yes and no. Because Logano, it kind of came off as a classic, block me once, whatever, block me twice, I'm going to wreck you.
But it's a
super speedway.
He forgot it was Daytona. And yeah, it was like
that was the thing. Like, it was like the Stenhouse came down. There was a little bit of contact. And then Logano continued to force the issue. And it was like, I think Stenhouse should have moved up. You know, and I think as soon as there was the contact, Stenhouse should have turned to the right and, like, cleared but he didn't. And I don't know if it was the air was pulling them together. I don't know, but it just the way it looked, Logano wasn't giving an inch, and Stenhouse was saying, "I'm coming down," and boom.
Kyle Busch had one of the fastest cars too. I already thought he was gonna do the 20 years of trying thing again, like everyone, like Fox mentioned, like 50 times, anytime there was a Cup Series broadcast.
He was the favorite to win, though. DraftKings had him favored, but anyways. All right, folks. Any other thoughts?
No.
All right. Coming up, Cup Series headed to Atlanta. IndyCar's a couple weeks out. Formula One's a couple weeks out.
Short track racing starts at the end of March. We
just got hit with another snowstorm, so I think the short tracks around here are they're a couple weeks out. but don't worry, Jordan's got a full summer worth of activities planned.
Way more. So it's not going to be just like a 2 minute segment. Like, oh, yeah, this person won.
I know. I'm
going to be around.
He's going to have his own podcast.
Yeah, he probably could.
Here's the Jordan podcast. And now we'll talk about NASCAR.
I'll be with the NASCAR Wheel of Modified Tour, doing stuff with the Tri Track Series, Pro All Star Series, American Canadian Tour. I mean,
that'd be cool.
Pretty much any touring series in New England. Anytime they race in New England, I'll assume I'm going to be there.
Well, and like I said in the beginning, we're going to do our best to keep this show going. With that said, if anybody out there wants to sponsor like a segment or something like the Short Track Saturday segment, we're going to do. If anybody wants to sponsor that, reach out to us. I mean, you utilize our platform to advertise, and we'll be more than willing to do it. Reach out to us. Race season's just getting started. 37 weeks to go for NASCAR.
35.
No, it's 38 consecutive weeks with something with NASCAR on the schedule. So 37 to go.
Oh. Yes. Well, Cup Series has 36 races.
That's true. But there are a couple weeks where it's like Xfinity and truck and all that.
But, well, yeah.
That the Cup's
not
running. Yeah. Right. Folks, he questions me. And I do know what I'm talking about.
Sometimes.
Not. Anyways. For Jordan, I'm Devin. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you all next week for another episode of Racing Hotspot.